Welcome to the Strong for Performance podcast, where we give coaches and consultants practical ideas for taking you to the next level in your business and in your life. I'm your host, Meredith Bell. I interview experts who've walked in your shoes and offer real-world experience that you can apply to your own journey. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Strong for Performance. I'm your host, Meredith Bell, and with me today is one of my favorite people, Dr. Mark Goulston. Welcome, Mark.
Always glad to be with you, Meredith. You know, you're one of my favorite people, too.
Oh, good. Well, so we have our own little fan club here, and we're letting everybody else in on it today. Well, one of the things I love about Mark is that he is such a prolific creator of content and of ideas. He's written two of my very favorite books. One is Just Listen, and the other is Talking to Crazy. And Mark is so effective because he has, his training was as a psychiatrist. He worked with a lot of folks who had very serious problems, some of them suicidal thoughts, and he was extremely effective in learning how to be empathic, connect with them, and really make a difference. And so he's taken those skills to the corporate world and has helped teach leaders and other people inside organizations how to really connect and be more effective. And today I'm very excited about our topic because he's going to be discussing something that I think many coaches and consultants struggle with when it comes to sales and marketing. And that's this whole idea of how can you be compelling and also convincing without trying to be too pushy. And Mark, I know you have a lot of expertise in that area, and so I'm looking forward to having you share that. And in addition, Mark's going to be telling us about Apple and Steve Jobs and how they created their products to be compelling, and he's going to share a very special formula with us on how to have that same impact with your own business. So, Mark, welcome. Let's get started.
Yeah. What I find with a lot of people is that they tend to be more convincing than compelling, and when you try to convince people, you come off as pushy. You're pressuring them. Compelling, you draw them towards you. So the more that you can attract people towards you so that they want more of you, the more influential you'll be. And in the long run, the more persuasive you'll be. What happens too often, though, is people will try to be convincing about not only what they do it, but this is how I do it, and this is how it happens. And a lot of people will sort of smile like this, but they often end up like deers in the headlights of a sales pitch that they'd like to get out of. And being compelling is the way you open people's minds so that they want more of you. And as you mentioned, for actually a year, I toured playing Steve Jobs coming back from the dead. And I had the turtleneck on, I had the glasses on, and I probably gave it about 15, 18 times. But then what happened is he became more historic. And we have a reigning visionary, Elon Musk. And he, by the way, he follows the same thing, the same unconscious formula to make his products, his presentations more compelling than other people. And that's why we want to hear more. We want to know what he's doing and what he's doing next. The formula that I've observed that Steve Jobs and Elon Musk does when they introduce a product actually is the same reaction that Steve Jobs had when he first noticed the graphical user interface at Xerox PARC. Now, that's the mouse. That was the first time he realized that you could interact with a computer in this playful way using a mouse and the graphical user interface. And we're going to play a video of him doing that, but I'm going to give you the formula because I want you to notice how, as he's retelling the story, that he follows the formula. So the formula is simply this. It's four steps. The first step is whoa, W-H-O-A. The second step is wow, W-O-W. The third step is HMMM, and the fourth step is yes. And what those each mean is woe is what you need to do to break into people's minds, because people are overwhelmed, they're preoccupied, and you know you've created woe when the person you're speaking to or the audience says, can you repeat that again? Or if you're speaking to an audience, someone will elbow the person next to them. What did he say? What did she say? So you interrupt it, and really what woe means is I can't believe what I just saw or heard or read if you're putting out marketing materials. And then wow is you take a second check on what you first saw, heard, or read, and wow is that's astonishing, that's amazing, that's unbelievable. Is that what your product does? Is that what your service does? Is that what you do? And so that's what wow creates. And then once you've created that in your customer, client, or investor, or talent you're trying to attract, the next step is hmm. And hmm means this is too good not to use. This is too good to ignore. I don't know how we're going to use it, but we're going to use it. And then once your customer, or client, talent, or investor has a picture of how they're going to use it, they go, yes, sold. So to demonstrate this, we're now going to show a brief video of Steve Jobs recalling his visiting Xerox PARC and his first laying eyes on the graphical user interface.
And they showed me really three things. But I was so blinded by the first one that I didn't even really see the other two. One of the things they showed me was object-oriented programming. They showed me that, but I didn't even see that. The other one they showed me was really a networked computer system. They had over 100 Alto computers, all networked, using email, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't even see that. I was so blinded by the first thing they showed me, which was the graphical user interface. I thought it was the best thing I'd ever seen in my life. Now, remember, it was very flawed. What we saw was incomplete. They'd done a bunch of things wrong, but we didn't know that at the time. It's still, though, they had the germ of the idea was there, and they'd done it very well. And within, 10 minutes, it was obvious to me that all computers would work like this.
So if you watched that or heard that, I think you can see how Steve Jobs recalled how when he first laid eyes on the graphical user interface, what did he say? It was the best thing I'd ever seen in my life. And then he thought about it. It was flawed, but boy, it basically worked. And then at the end, he realizes within 10 minutes, I knew that all computers would work this way. So the question for you, if you're listening in, is when you do a presentation, when you write materials, when you speak to anyone, are you triggering whoa, wow, yes? Because in this low attention span world, if you're not triggering whoa, wow, yes, what you're triggering is, nah, never mind, no thanks, bye. So what we'd like you to do is that whenever you're making a presentation, whenever, even I'm hoping that our video today triggers whoa, wow, yes in you. And I'll share a story about that. I shared the formula with the CEO of Harvard Business Publishing, David Wan, great guy. He oversees all their publications. And as soon as I mentioned whoa, wow, yes, he spontaneously took out a piece of paper and he wrote down the formula. And then a little while later, I was speaking with Art Kleiner, and he was the editor-in-chief of Strategy and Business. That's kind of a competitor, HBR. And he did the same thing, took out a piece of paper. So just the whoa, wow, yes is a whoa, wow, yes. And so that's something you'd want to do. And by the way, if you have a business and a marketing department, go to them and say, does everything that our potential customer and client see, hear, or read about us trigger whoa, wow, yes? Because if it doesn't, we need to change it.
It would be great if you could give a couple of examples where people have actually used this. In the case, say, of Apple, how did Steve Jobs accomplish that with Elon Musk? How do you see him accomplishing it? Since you said they both utilize this formula without really consciously being aware of those four steps that you just described.
Well, I think part of it is one of the things that Steve Jobs and Elon Musk have in common, as do a lot of visionaries, is they're all a little bit ADD. And they're all easily distracted. And it takes a lot for them to really focus into something. And so what they need is, when they see something, it needs to trigger adrenaline in them, an adrenaline rush, because adrenaline is natural Adderall, and it helps them to focus. And so when they see something, one of the things that Elon Musk and Steve Jobs had in common is that they were first-class noticers. So that's another takeaway that you want to learn if you want to be impactful in the world and be compelling. Be a first-class noticer. So what Steve Jobs noticed is it was too difficult to use personal computers. You had to type in too much stuff. But when there was something that was visual, like a game, he noticed this now makes it fun. What Elon Musk has noticed in multiple industries is, well, why don't, you know, gasoline is too pricey. Why don't we come up with an electric engine? And geez, while we're at it, why don't we fly to the moon? In fact, why don't we take one of our cars and put it on one of our spaceships and let it fly off into the universe? And so they were first class noticers. And what you want to be, if you want to be successful, is you want to notice some unmet need out in the world. And also what you want to notice is coming up with a solution that is different. People do not remember better than, they remember different than. If you're better than, you're merely a commodity, because everybody says they're better than. But if you're different then you grab people's attention. So one of the ways that I've grabbed from my own experience in life when I'm talking about communication and being compelling is I always put in the introduction, or when people introduce me, they say, oh, he's a former FBI and police hostage negotiator. So that's a differentiator. So often, you know, it's not a very yes topic to talk about listening or communication, but when people say he's trained hostage negotiators, that suddenly makes me different. And so I use that as a differentiator. I think that what that triggers in people is, whoa, he must know something if he knows how to get through to people in life and death situations. So those would be a couple examples. One other one, which I often bring up when I'm giving a presentation, is, and I do it in this cutesy way, I say, what do you think is the likelihood of a multi-billionaire quoting a psychological type in an article that other billionaires will read, and this billionaire doesn't particularly believe in psychology, and he's really not that known for quoting other people? What do you think the chances of him doing that would be? Now, most people know it's a setup. And then I say, do a search for Eli Broad, B-R-O-A-D, Mark Goulston, G-O-U-L-S-T-O-N, and the very first search that comes out is a Forbes magazine article, and it says, Eli Broad picks the world's 7 most powerful philanthropists. And even there, when you do the search, you don't even want to click in the article, there's a quote there. And the quote is, wealth is what you take from the world, worth is what you give back, Mark Goulston. And there's a story behind that quote. I had met Eli at various functions, so he sort of knew who I was, and I'd given him some suggestions about some management issues. So he was willing to take my call because he sort of remembered me, and he was kind of polite. But Eli is a force of nature. I mean, he is in a rush, and I get him on the phone. And I say, hi, Eli, this is Mark Goulston. He said, yeah, Mark, I remember you. I'm in a rush. I got to do things. What's this about? I said, are you ever going to write a book on philanthropy? He says, Mark, I don't know. I really got to go. And I said, 7 seconds, Eli. Wealth is what you take from the world. Worth is what you give back. And then here's the whoa. Say that again, Mark. And I told him, wealth is what you take from the world. Worth is what you give back. It's a great title for a book. You know, I'm never going to be a philanthropist. I donate, but use it. Keep it. It's yours. You do a lot for the world. Don't attribute it to me. And he said, well, Mark, I got to rush. And then 6 months later, Forbes magazine calls me and says, we got a quote here from Eli Broad attributed to you. We just wanted to check it out. So clearly what happened is he went, whoa, that was something worth writing down. And then the wow is when he said, that's pretty good, Mark. And he wrote it down somewhere. And then when he wrote this article, they probably said, do you have any good quotes to start the article? And he went, I think I got a quote here from someone. And then he gave it to them, and that was the yes. So that's an example of, again, of using whoa, wow, yes. So I hope these are helpful examples of what you want to do, when you're going out and you're wanting to be compelling. So whoa, wow, yes is a way to be more compelling.
Well, I love all of those examples and thinking about our audience and how they could apply those. The one where you pulled out that you had trained the FBI on negotiating with hostages, and that really set you up as different from others. When I think about today, it's pretty competitive, with people who are executive coaches. I know larger companies are doing a lot to vet potential candidates. And so I think your idea applies really well to them. Similarly with consultants who work with business owners or do other things within organizations, what is it about them that really makes them different? And I love your distinction between better and different. And so if they go back and look at what's my story, what are some of the elements of things that I've done that maybe I've taken for granted or haven't given myself adequate credit for, but would be compelling for someone to hear about.
Well, I'll share something.
Stupid questions.
So here's something that is I've developed into a training presentation, and Just Listen has done very well. It became the top book on listening in the world, and it's in 23 languages. But I'm continually learning, and in the last 6 months, I learned something that has really changed my life as both a coach, a consultant, husband, dad, and I'm practicing it because I don't do it naturally. And so when I'm with people, and I'm actually going to do it with you, Meredith, is
right.
I notice when I'm with people that they're always looking for and listening for something. And so I focus on what they might be looking for and listening for. And when I'm with people and I'm looking into their eyes because I'm just curious about what they're looking for and listening for, it's really a fascinating way that we connect eye to eye. And so if I would apply that to you, and if you're a coach or a consultant, you could actually use this, and I'm going to give away the formula, could say, Meredith, we're talking here and you're listening and I'm checking on what you might be listening for, and I wanted to run it by you. So let me see if I've got it right. So getting where someone's coming from without their telling you where they're coming from is very compelling because they feel, gee, if you can read my mind, I wonder what else you know about me. So what I would say is, Meredith, I think what you're looking for and listening for is that I give material that is relevant to your listeners and viewers. Not just relevant, but immediately usable. Something they can do right after they hear the interview or the podcast that makes their lives better. I think you're also looking and listening for something that they don't have to be an expert psychologist type. You're looking for something that's free of jargon, that's not complicated, that's just incredibly simple, like whoa, wow, yes. And you're also looking and listening for whether you have confidence in what I'm saying and confidence in me. Now, what your listeners may or may not know, because we've had many interviews like this, is you have a lot of confidence in me that on each of our conversations that I seem to bring a value that is immediately usable. So is any of that accurate, what I just said?
100%, all of it.
Yeah. And so, see, you could actually say this. If you're a consultant or a coach, instead of pulling back and thinking what you're going to sell them, And if someone's asking you, well, tell me what it is that you do, what you can say to them is, well, let me see if I can earn the right to your attention. So you say that to a potential client. As we're talking, I'm imagining that you're looking for and listening for something. And I'm imagining that what you're looking for and listening for is something that is relevant to you now. Maybe something to help you deal with a situation that you're facing right now. Or maybe something that you can use beyond now in the long run. And something also, you're looking for something that's doable by you, where you don't have to become some sort of expert or have my expertise, because you really like to get whatever this issue is solved. Am I accurate? Am I tracking with you? Is that part of what you're looking for and listening for? And they're going to say yes. And then you can say, can you fill me in on what some of those issues might be that you would really like a solution or help with that you haven't found? And then they're opening up to you. And then you can even say, you know, and thank you for sharing that with me. And now I'm imagining that what you're looking and listening for is not just that I have a relevant solution, but that you can have confidence in me, that you have a feeling that what I'm sharing with you will actually solve the situation you're trying to solve, and that it will work out. So is that also true? You know, am I being relevant? Am I being someone that you can have confidence in? Are those true? And so by having this engaging conversation, can you see how you're compelling them to actually want to find out more, and how that is much different than a sales pitch?
Well, absolutely. I love what you just said. And I'm sure people are taking notes and are adapting that as a script to use in the future, because the focus is really on them. And the beauty of that for someone who's a coach and consultant and is often uncomfortable in the sales role is they're really just continuing the role they've already been comfortable in, the service they're typically providing, asking questions, you know, checking to see if it's accurate. But in this case, it's related to this potential client and what's important to them. And so I was just imagining a scenario in which that conversation would take place and thinking how it goes such a long way in building trust with that prospective client as they are seeing, again, how different this type of conversation is compared to what they usually are subjected to with people trying to convince them why you ought to go with me because my services are this, this, and this. And instead, just being so present with them, because, you know, Mark, what you're describing here as an approach to take really requires somebody being fully present. You can't just halfway be listening. You've got to really be tuned in to that person and what you're sensing from them beyond the words they're saying in order to really come out with the comments and checking out of things that you just described.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm going to give you another takeaway. So I do masterminds with coaches and salespeople and executives on how to be more impactful. And so here's another lost leader, as we say. Lost leaders are supposed to be compelling. And there's no bait and switch. You don't have to buy anything from me. So also in the conversation, once they're engaging, there's something that I sometimes use. And I say, I think one of the things that you're also listening for is what I call 1116. And they're going to say, what? Yeah, 1116. And this is especially helpful if you're doing B2B selling, and you're talking to a buyer who's wanting to buy not coaching services or product. And they're going to say, what is 1116? It's simple. What you're listening for is if you do say yes to our working together that you won't regret it one day, one week, or one month from now. Because you've said yes to things that you regretted one day, one week, one month, and you're listening and hoping that this won't turn into it. And what you're also listening for, and you're not even aware of it, is something that 6 months from now, you say, that was one of the best decisions I've made in a long time. That was a home run. Hiring you, bringing you in to train, buying your product, buying your services, that was one of the best decisions I've made in a long time. So if you add that, what's going to happen? And another way that you know that you've triggered the whoa, wow, and the hmm, is if you're with them face to face, when you go about the 1116, and you explain it to them, they're going to break eye contact with you. They're going to look up like this, and they're going to think about that. Let's see, 1116. Wow, I wasn't even aware of that. And when they look up to consider, yeah, I'm really listening for whether I'll regret it one day, one week, one month from now, and whether 6 months from now, I'll say that's one of the best decisions I've made in a long time. When they look up to consider it and then they look at you, it's a different conversation.
That's magic.
It's semi-magic, and you know, and that's part of what we, you know, we cover in the mastermind groups and also in coaching and training and whatnot.
Well, the other thing about it is it's very, you know, genuine and non-manipulative. You're simply laying out, because anyone that I can think of in that role of trying to sell their services wouldn't, and is, of course, an ethical person, wouldn't bring that up without being convinced that they can deliver on that promise, that 6 months from now, that person would be thrilled to have made that decision. So that is a fabulous formula. Thank you.
And what it also means is don't sell or have a service that you don't think is top notch.
Yes.
So see, if you get people to trust you, and when you do the 1116, people not only feel you're relevant and they're not only confident in you, they have trust in you. Mm-hmm. And the point is, if you're selling something or you're offering a service that's mediocre, they're going to come after you because you got them to lower their guard and trust you, and you didn't deliver. So I wouldn't use that last thing unless you have a service or a product that delivers on it. And if you don't, find another service or product.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing is, depending on the length of the service or product you're going to be providing, is following up to check with them between, you know, day one and the 6 month period to, you know, make sure, get feedback along the way to get a sense of their level of delight with their decision. So you're not just kind of hoping 6 months from now they'll say, yeah, that was a great decision.
Absolutely. And in fact, what you want to say is, by the way, if we decide to work together, I'm going to check in with you, and you figure out at the very longest every month, maybe if you're coaching, you know, once a month is probably enough. And we're going to have a coaching call, and it's going to be no charge to you because you're going to be helping me get better. What I want to ask you is, are we on track? Are we on track to what you're wanting to accomplish? Am I keeping that promise? Because if you don't accomplish or get the result you want, and I didn't keep my promise to you, it's going to affect my credibility and my reputation, and I can't allow that to happen.
Excellent. That's great, Mark. I love all these tips that you've shared with us, the compelling versus convincing, the four steps that people like Steve Jobs and Elon Musk use unconsciously, and then what you just shared with the 1116. Now, in kind of pulling it all together, are there any other insights or tips related to any of that that you feel would be valuable to our listeners? You've provided so much value already.
Well, I think the key is really know what your service or product is the best solution to. Also, try to drill down and see what makes your product or service different. Because as I said, if you merely say you're better than, because everyone says they're better than, you're just going to be a commodity and they're going to squeeze you on price. But if you come up with something that does make it different, it's got to be real. You can't just sort of say it. I mean, I didn't make it up that I trained FBI and police hostage negotiators. Something else, which I use as a differentiator, but you can just hear it. Meredith, as you know, one of my personal missions is to prevent suicide, and I'm part of a documentary called Stay Alive, which people can see at, they go to youtube.com/stayalivevideo, and it's won a couple awards, and I interview Kevin Hines, who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. But part of what makes me different is I was a boots on the ground suicide prevention expert, and in 25 years, none of my patients killed themselves. So that's kind of a differentiator also. So find out what makes you different, and then you won't be treated like a commodity.
Excellent. Yes, that's and I think that ties back to people positioning themselves, whether it's on social media, in their marketing materials, be upfront about what it is that causes somebody to stop and go, whoa, because that's the first step. And I think that what you've just described is excellent. By the way, I want to put a plug in for your other podcast that you've got now called My Wake Up Call, where you interview a variety of people, from Larry King to other celebrities. And each one of those interviews in and of itself is quite compelling. I haven't been able to listen to all of them because you're so prolific. But every single one that I have has been an excellent investment of my time because of your skills in drawing out people's experiences and getting them to talk about their own, not weaknesses so much as vulnerable moments when they've been faced with tough situations and they have been able to prevail and what impact that's had on the rest of their lives. So I want to encourage people to look up My Wake Up Call podcast with Dr. Mark Goldston. And I'm always looking forward to your next project because there's always plenty of them coming. And you also have a new podcast now for suicide prevention, right? By the same name?
It's called Stay Alive. Mm-hmm. And you can find that if you go to the Mental Health News Radio Network, there are over 50 podcasts, and they're all related to mental health and wellness. And in Stay Alive, I speak with people who've been touched by suicide, either someone in their family has died by suicide, or they've made attempts, and how they've gotten through it and how they've lived with it. Because, you know, at the end of Schindler's List, there was a famous quote and a famous scene in which Schindler says, I could have saved so many more. And the character played by Ben Kingsley says to Schindler, he gives a quote, I think, from the Bible, whoever saves one life saves the world. So that's part of my central journey. And for you listeners, if you can make connections where we can show the movie Stay Alive and do Q&As in high schools, colleges, town hall meetings, that's probably what I find most compelling in my life.
So how can people reach you and connect with you, Mark, so that they can actually do that?
I have a website called markgoldston.com, and I talk about that I'm an elephant hunter because, you know, what I focus on is the elephant in the room, which is something that as soon as you reveal it, it's obvious, but nobody sees it. So the elephant in the room about being compelling versus convincing is compelling is going to open people's minds, and convincing, if you do it too early, is going to cause them to close up their minds. So you can reach me at markgoldston.com. Something else you can do for me, I have a pretty big Twitter following, 560,000, and I have a permanently pinned tweet for people who've been touched by suicide, and it has 2.4 million impressions and over 1,500 comments, and people just list all the people they know who have died by suicide. And I think it's saving lives because people feel less alone. They just go visit that. And it's pretty tough and it's heart-wrenching, but I think it's life-saving because, you know, suicide rates are sky high. It's an epidemic. And I'm going to do whatever I can to make it better.
Wow. I appreciate your commitment to that very important work. And your Twitter handle, is it Dr. Mark Gulston?
It's just at Mark Gulston.
At Mark Gulston.
MarkGulston.
Great.
And so thank you for listening in. Meredith and I always hope that you find things that you can use today that are doable by you. And who knows, maybe we created yes, you never know.
That is an excellent point. Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate your being with me today, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Always, Meredith, always. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Strong for Performance podcast. Now head over to growstrongleaders.com to learn how our tools can increase your impact with clients and expand your business. And while you're there, grab our free ebook, The 5 Secrets to Getting Better at Anything. Until next time, I'm Meredith Bell. Make it a great day.